It's November 7th, 2022. Ward Green here. 1226 hours. Yeah, 1226 hours. I'm starting the video over again because the volume was set too loud on the video. So I'm sure it would have been too loud. So I'm going to restart this. This is Oscar Peterson with Dick Cavett.
Stretch the Bösendorfer here. Well, I thank you, and His Grace the Duke thanks you, and Oscar, let's hurry through this. I've got some notes here from my scrapbook. I wonder if it'd be possible to pick a tune and have you show us just superficially, perhaps.
Are you going
to
pick a tune that I know?
I'll let you pick the tune.
No, go ahead.
Because I might pick Buttons and Bows, or who knows. And if you could just show us some of this, what I think are called stylistic trademarks of other pianists. Mm-hmm. Now, what do we mean by the phrase, the stride piano of Art Tatum?
The stride piano of Tatum or people of that era is the ability to play the background for yourself and make it work like a rhythm section. As opposed to when you play with a rhythm section, mm-hmm. where you would just hold a chord, usually, or punctuate with a chord and play. Because the drummer is playing, the bass player is playing... This way you go.
Yeah. So the right hand is really the instrument, and the left hand is putting the rhythm section out of work.
That's right. That's the idea.
Okay. what else did I put down here? Oh, yeah, here's something I wrote, made note of. That's, talking about influences on you, and quote, the two-fingered percussiveness of Nat Cole. Oh. Could you show the two-fingered percussiveness
for us? Yeah, Nat would do this sort of thing.
Or the TPC.
Each note has its own articulation rather than being an insipid phrase like...
Yeah.
It's... And he used mostly the front end of his hand.
Emphatic like that.
It was very emphatic. Sort of, it was articulated like you do in speech.
Then the Muzak running all notes together. That's part of the sentence. The other part they could hear in your early influence was the lyric octave work of Earl Garner.
Oh, they're talking about the full chords like this, where Errol used a handful of chords to play melody. If he was going to play Getting Sentimental, he might play it like this. And delay it like that.
Uh-huh.
And as I said on another show, you have to know how to be able to do the proper delay so it doesn't sound false.
Since you didn't name the airline, you better not name the other show.
I won't.
What was it, run by a middle-aged man with white hair?
No.
Oh, okay. What about the relaxed block chords, or would that be a typo for black chords? No. I guess not in George Shearing's case.
Not in George Shearing's. George Shearing used this kind of thing. To run melodies like Roses of Picardy. Where he used the fullness of a sax section almost, instead of playing. You get the full chord.
Now, play it again with partial chord.
Partial chord would be two notes, for instance. It's much sparse, more sparse. This is full.
You know, it just occurred to me that I read so that you had given up singing because you sounded a little too much like a well-known singer. Don't say who it is.
I'm not going to sing.
Let's see. Could you do a little bit of a Blossom Fell and see if the audience can tell who you sound like?
I wish I could.
Or what's that thing? Give Me a Kiss to Build a Dream On.
No.
Do you really sound like him?
Well, it's debatable.
You won't do it?
That way.
I don't want to embarrass you.
You don't embarrass me. I sing occasionally when I feel.
You do?
Feel up to it.
Could you sing just a bit and see if you sound like anybody? I'll be the
what
judge.
A day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Well, it's almost like being loved. And if you say Donna Summers, you're in deep trouble.
And so are you.
That's right.
No, I think everyone... I think everyone recognized the voice of the immortal George Burns. let's not explain it. What are double-handed, or is it double-octave bass lines?
Oh, I think there was, well, actually, what you mean, double octave melody lines.
Maybe.
Rather than bass lines.
Maybe.
Because if you play a linear invention, if you play as a gain on Sweet Georgia, if you invent something as an alternative line, then you can play the same thing with two hands.
Are they doing the identical thing, those two hands?
Right. Get in two, two different places in the piano. It gives a little different substance. This is a little difficult to do if you haven't been doing it.
Was that ever hard for you, or when you were the first time you tried that, could you do it?
No, I couldn't do it the first time I tried it.
Okay. What would I be hearing if the pianist was tonality based? I've seen that term thrown around.
Oh, you'd be hearing. All right, if you take the same tune, Roses, Picardy, right? You'd hear this sort of thing. Melodies. You might hear a more involved harmony, like. Whatever they chose to do. You're just moving the harmonies around, changing them to give it to a different shape to the tune.
Thank you for this master lesson. Quickly, two 10-second questions. How good a trumpet player was Louis Armstrong in musician's terms?
Fantastic trumpet player.
Yeah. And the other one is, how long has wigs been a verb transitive, as in cigarette holder that wigs me, in the lyrics to Satin Doll? But you don't need to answer that.
All right, it won't bother.
Oscar Peterson, it's a genuine thrill to have you here.
Thank
and
you.
If you would play us off, it would be wonderful. Just a little cocktail piano.
Like that?
Yeah. Thank you. Oscar Peterson.
Interesting. One might think that Oscar Peterson, you know, since he was one of the greatest, or often considered the greatest, quite often, the greatest piano pianist or piano player ever, who ever lived. But, I mean, some people might have said that or might say that, but who would have thought that somebody who was so famous and widely acclaimed would actually have someone else who, you know, with whom he or to whom he felt, or, you know, by, I don't know, in comparison with, he felt much, much inferior. And that was Art Tatum, who was quite a brilliant piano player who had some eyesight problems as well. And I was listening to some of Art's work today, actually. Here it is, I guess. Yeah. That's it here. This is. But it's interesting because Oscar Peterson, well, hopefully we'll listen to a video where he talks about that, but later we'll listen to that another day, perhaps. Oscar talks about how hearing Art Tatum for the first time made Oscar feel like he wanted to quit the piano completely. So just because we might think that somebody's a great musician, that doesn't mean that they think that of themselves. It's very important to be aware of that, or it's very useful to be aware of that, or it's instructive, it's eye-opening to be aware of that. I wanted to talk about, what was I going to say? There's so many different interesting things going on. I hope I can remember everything I was going to talk about, but it just threw me when I threw in Art Tatum all of a sudden. You know, that threw me off the path of my intent of what I was saying. Now, let me think for a moment here. Can I remember what I was going to say here? There's weather. There's my deck. There's the work I did yesterday too. I think I talked about that already, though. The work I did yesterday, but I'm thinking about my deck today. I found a real potential issue problem with the joist hangers on my deck, that they were getting rusty. So I decided to treat them with the anti-rust treatment again. So that was very important to get that done. I probably should paint them or something once I clean them up. Once the rust is kind of remediated a bit, I can probably paint them with Tremclad, just some paint to protect them, an anti-rust paint that protects. But what was I talking about? Oh yeah, well, one thing I was going to talk about too is that it's going to get colder supposedly tomorrow. We're going to have freezing weather even tonight, but tomorrow night, it's supposed to be, we're going to have a big drop in temperatures, it's saying in the forecast. But we might have even up until the 12th, it might not rain, so might not rain 5 more days inclusive, which is a lot of good weather. It's just ridiculous good weather that we've been having. I've thought about, why don't I make music all the time? One reason is because it takes all of your focus, you know, to write songs, for example. To write songs, and it's not what you think. You can't talk about writing songs and then write songs. I don't believe that's possible. You can't say, I'm going to write a song and then write a song and have it be any good. I think songwriting replaces conversation, or it replaces other expressions in your life. So if you have no expressions in your life, then your songwriting is your expression. It becomes your sole expression. That is the only way to do songwriting and do it the best you can, is to eliminate, you know, your other avenues of expression to just by narrowing down into that one avenue of songwriting. You're saying everything is in this song. I'm putting everything in the song. That's the only way to do it. To do it as well as possible and to do it well, you know, is what I believe. So I'm not just a songwriter, though. So for me to give up all these other things that I have talent for, like I've invented foot powder or whatever, reverse engineered it, and now I'm developing my own foot powder with different fragrance and so on. I mean, it's the power of creativity is endless, and it shouldn't be limited, I don't believe, anyway. But I mean, I know people are free, they should be free to think otherwise, but I believe we should express ourselves in many different ways. I just think I'm happier because I have other outlets other than just music. I haven't been playing music recently, you know, but it's not necessary to do it all the time. I think I'm listening to music right now, and that is that's a almost as good as writing a song. It's to listen to good music. It's really stimulating. But you'll only write a song, I found, in my case anyway, I would only write a song when that was my only avenue of any of, you know, my only way to solve my problems was to write a song. Like, it has to be your solution to life. Life's problems is writing a song. In order for you to write the best song possible, you have to say, this is the way I'm going to solve all my problems, is writing a song. And I don't mean, when I say you have to, I'm just saying this is just my way of looking at it. I'm not saying anybody else has to see it the same way, but that's the way that you achieve high quality in any field, I believe, is by making it your sole focus. So I love, you know, my other engineering skills. I love all my engineering skills and things, like part of which is cooking. I mean, cooking is, in a sense, engineering too. I love that. I've been enjoying this potato soup recently, and making potato soup and changing it into chili, and by, as I get near the end, adding some chili and then adding some other things to that chili, like more tomatoes and more vegetables like corn or peas, and, you know, just, but the tomatoes seem to be the key to making a chili really good. That's what I've been finding out through this ongoing pot of food that I have, perpetual pot of food that I never have to clean the pot because I keep using it. It stays clean by being hot all the time. But I mean, it's potato soup. It becomes onion soup sometimes. It's got garlic in the potato soup. It's got fresh potatoes put in from time to time. And I mean, I can make other types of food too. I can make some home fries with those same potatoes if I don't want to put them in the soup. But I can make rice in the same frying pan that I make the home fries. Oh, I want to talk about, that's right, that's what I nearly forgot about, but then I banged my watch on something and that reminded me. That's what I wanted to start out with in this video. Was I intended to start it with this idea of the analog dial of a watch being superior to a digital. I wanted to explain this, okay? This isn't, so it'll work on a device where you can have an analog format for the watch. This works fine. This idea of analog, it works just as well on a digital watch as long as it's an analog display. This idea works for any analog display. The idea is there's more of a memory. I'm not even showing my watch. I'm looking at the wrong monitor. This is my watch. An analog display is superior to a digital readout for at least one reason. The one reason I realized the other day was I was out doing my lawn and I looked at both watches one after the other, and then later I tried to remember what my digital watch had told me the time was, and I couldn't remember the time from that. But then I remembered the analog watch and I could remember the position of the hands because it's graphical. I could remember, so I knew it must have been 12:42, and it was 12:42 on the digital, 12:43 on the analog. I knew it was 12:43 because I could remember the positions of the hands on the watch. That's something you can do on an analog display, is you get a graphical memory of it. That's something that people don't always think about. It's not commonly known, right? It's not typically thought of. So a lot of our advancements, the interesting aspect of this that I find, the most interesting aspect as it seems to me, is that it means that all technological advancement has this negative potential to lose things that were beneficial about the older technology. Right? I mean, we probably knew this already, but all modern innovations, even though they might make great improvements in certain aspects of the devices that they're replacing, they lose something that was beneficial, very possibly anyway. That's the idea. And these beneficial things that are lost, then we come back and try to get them back again. Like the, now they're making analog displays like the Apple watches or other types of watches that are digital watches. But, for example, you know, they allow for the idea of these analog displays to be recreated in the digital format on the screen, on the display of the watch. So we do like this analog idea of displaying a watch with hands on a face. We like it for a good reason, and that's because it is beneficial. It does have benefits. So that to me is sort of a metaphor for life too. Like we go through life, and in life there are, I'll say probably, but at least possibly, a lot of things like that. Probably a lot, but a lot of different things are like that in life, where we can leave things behind and then we want to go back and get those things back again. We don't want to leave things behind, really. Even though it's great to leave our possessions behind, for example, when they don't mean anything compared to what's important in life, it's great to be able to leave those possessions behind. And, for example, in an emergency, to just run away and leave the possessions and say, I don't care about the... Or if somebody, you know, tries to mug us, to just give them our possessions voluntarily and to not have any attachment or to not try to retain our possessions, that preserves our soul, our more important thing, which is our soul, our life. I got onto that, which is a sidetrack of this idea of the analog watch, which has nothing to do with an analog watch, I don't think, except the mugging. Somebody might try to steal your watch. Well, you just give them your watch. You can always get another watch, you know. It's not a big thing. I mean, when somebody robs you or anything like that, I think it's not only wiser, but it's the loving thing to do, is to just give the person what they want. I mean, I can't think of how many times I wanted to give people things. I wanted to share with people things of mine, whether it was knowledge or possessions. I wanted to be able to share with someone else and give them something. I wanted to help other people. But when somebody tries to rob you or mug you or steal your things, why would you not say, well, you're welcome, take it? You know, like, because that is, in a way, it's far more lonely to be a person who just tries to keep all your possessions. It's loving to give things, and all of us have this capacity for love. We've all thought of being a benefactor, being a person who gives things to others, a benefactor. People can benefit from somebody giving them something. Now, that doesn't mean that people should have everything given to them either, but it's just that this quality of giving is part of us. It's part of our loving nature, which is our divine nature. It's a divine nature that was created in us. It's not something that is produced by random chance. It's something that was created in us by a loving creator. That's the idea of the Bible also, that is the idea of God created the universe. However much people try to get away from that idea, it rings hollow when they do. It just doesn't have the same power, and it doesn't ring true. Far, far from the truth, in fact, of creation, of Jehovah creating all things, and of us having been created in the image of God, the true God, the creator. So we have a desire to create and to give and to share. So I was out when I was cutting my, when I put my, I talked about the weed eater, I guess. I winterized my weed eater. I think that was yesterday. When I was cutting the grass, I noticed a mole jumped out of a hole in the ground. And this, as I was cutting, when I got too close to the home of this mole, the mole ran out of his hole and ran about 4 feet or five, three, four, 5 feet away and went into another hole. All at once, just came out, ran, and went into another hole. How did that mole remember or know where that hole was? He had memorized the exact location of his other home. So that really struck me as significant and interesting that this mole knew where to go exactly to get to his other home. And then I thought, okay, yeah, now I'm coming to the other thing I did want to talk about. The moles get into my car or whatever. I think it's the moles or maybe it's some other animal, but the moles get into my car, I believe. Some animal does. So this year I'm trying to repel them using the Bounce dryer sheets, you know, and these fragrant sheets you put in your dryer to prevent they're anti-static or something like that. And they have a fragrance, but they don't really smell good to me. It's just, you know, they don't smell too bad, and it's just they smell too much like an artificial smell to me, but these animals don't like the smell, so they stay away. So I'm putting them in my car, and I'm spraying this peppermint spray, which apparently animals don't like either. The peppermint spray around my car, I sprayed it again today just to make sure I have enough spray around the car for right now before it snows. But you can do it several times a year. You could probably spray the peppermint even in the winter when it's snowing. I mean, there's no reason why you can't go take a spray bottle and spray peppermint where you don't want these animals. But here's the thing. Just because you prevent the animal from getting into that place, guess what that means? I mean, if you think about it, that doesn't mean you're going to prevent them from getting in somewhere else where you didn't spray. And if you prevent them getting in where they like to be when you don't spray, then that's going to cause them to get in possibly somewhere else where you don't want them. Or maybe a place where you want them even less, where they're less desirable. Like they might get into another thing that's important to you. So I've been wondering what, you know, I may have to spray around my lawnmower to keep them out of there. But I don't know why they'd harm that. But the smell from their waste products would be not too pleasant. That's the thing. That's what I know. I already know that from my car example. But what I need to think of is where are they going to go next? But the other thing I thought of is, what kind of home do they like? Because if I knew what kind of home they liked, I'd build them a home and they could live there in the winter. If I just knew what they liked. If I didn't, the problem is I could build them a home and then they'd just go somewhere else where they like, right? If they don't like my home that I built them. I need to know what kind of home they like, and then I could build them a home and then they can go in it. That's my idea of that I need to solve that problem. So that I can have a whole colony of these creatures living there in the wintertime. I guess it you have to draw the line somewhere too. That was the idea I had a while back. I forgot about this idea. You have to draw the line. This is an idea. You have to draw the line somewhere. Remember, Jesus was writing in the sand when the woman was there in the beginning of John chapter 8, the beginning of that chapter. He's writing in the sand, right? After they asked him about the woman's sin, he writes in the sand. That's, to me, he's saying you have to draw the line somewhere. That's one way of thinking of that. You have to draw the line somewhere in life, in everything. Like somebody says, well, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. Well, you can only take so much advice, and then you have to draw the line and say, I'm not going to take any more advice. Right? I mean, you've got to draw that line in the sand somewhere where you say that's where your input stops and that's where my output begins. That's a very, very important concept. And it applies to things like religious evangelizers trying to get you to do things, you know, or people, any organization trying to get you to join their organization. You have to draw the line somewhere where you say, you know, this is where you stop and this is where I can't get my hand to do what I want it to do here. There we go. This is where you stop, right? Which way? This is where you stop, and this is where I begin. It's a mirror image. I'm looking at a mirror image that I can't turn my hand the correct way. When you're looking at a mirror image, you always go the wrong way. There, sort of. This is where you stop and I begin, right? A line that has to be drawn. It's there. It's real. And you know, it doesn't mean we have to agree with other people to take their advice either. I was thinking of that. We could still take advice from other people or use the information they give us. Sometimes we can use the opposite of what they tell us, but or whatever we do, but whatever we want, but we don't have to agree with someone to learn from them. Like, I mean, when I was more, you know, active in the ministry, preaching and teaching or just traveling around more, I was aware that even though there were a lot of people I met, I didn't want to live the way they did, and I didn't agree with what they said, perhaps. But there's always something I agreed with in what they said. I could always find, if I really tried, I could always find something. Still trying to see if I can do this. Something in what they said that I could agree with. Boy, that's hard. Mastering the mirror image idea of moving your hand when you're looking at a mirror image and trying to master its position. Right. It's exceedingly difficult. Okay. So yeah, there was always, you could find something if you search for what you could learn from someone. If you always search for what you could learn from them instead of what you didn't like, you could be very powerful from doing that, from taking a little bit from everybody, taking a little kernel of truth from each person you meet. I became very powerful in my wisdom, in my ability to use wisdom to my advantage, and in my ability to write songs and all those things. That made me powerful. Well, one of the reasons that I could write songs, one of the main reasons was because I performed. I was a performer. So I wrote songs with the purpose of being a performer. I wanted to share these songs. But when I was performing, that's when I got more ideas for writing songs, because I knew I was going to be performing, or because I had an audience. So I had people, a target audience, at whom I could aim my songs. I could aim my songs at them. You know, I could say this without really consciously saying, these are the people I'm aiming my song at. It just happens that I could write a song because I had an audience of some kind. I knew what people were like, but I had I knew that anyway. It's just that I knew more recently. I had recent contact with people, which would enable me to identify with their thoughts and feelings much more easily, so that I could write a song more easily. But I mean, I'm not saying you should do that at all. I'm not saying that performing is a good idea, but anyways, nowadays we don't need to go out and perform. We can perform at home on the internet. We can publish on the internet, publish whatever we want. We can do it live or not. The reason I don't have a live stream, my problem is if I start a live stream, I'll never stop. I'll be broadcasting live. I don't want to start something I can't finish. I mean, I wouldn't be able to finish a live stream. I'd never stop. It's why I'm not doing it, I think. Probably it's the same reason why I can't donate money to a certain organization, because I wouldn't know where to stop. That's the problem. So I have to find my own path. And even making these videos, I seemingly can't stop making these daily videos either, because once I start, I want to do it, and it's difficult to stop. But I mean, it gets harder every day to make another video. I was out measuring today. See, once I get started with the video, though, once I get started that particular video, it's not as hard as I thought. But I was out today measuring my deck to find out what the distance was I had to span to wall in the sections I need to wall in. And so I measured that, and I know 6 by 6 feet, and there's a 10-foot extension that's triangular in shape. The longest part is the triangular extension. The longest total distance is 10 feet for the rectangle plus the triangle extension. So 6 by 10 or 6 by 6, depending on how you want to do it or how you look at it. That's the area I'm looking at building a wall for. A suspended wall between the house and the stairs, but it can't be attached to the stairs. It's going to be attached to the vertical post on the deck. But I looked at the vertical post on the deck, and I realized that vertical post is not attached to anything. It's supporting the weight of the deck, potentially is anyway, but there's no nails holding it on. It's notched in. It's got a notch cut in it. It fits into the notch, but it's only in by about an inch or so. And it's not got any nails in it. And then I go up and it's attached to the railing, and it's attached to the rails, but there's no nails in the post attaching it to the deck. It's sitting on concrete, on a pillar, concrete pillar. But it's not got any nails in it. So if I'm going to build a wall on that, I'm going to put some nails in that thing. I'm going to anchor that first. I have like 6-inch nails. I've got to use a long nail and drive it through. I've got to anchor this thing with something real, you know, something strong like steel. These big spikes that are 5-inch, I guess if 5-inch spikes will do it. That will work. A 5-inch spike will do the job. I'll just drill a bit of a pilot hole or something, and then just bash it in there, and I'll put a few of them in there. That'll be the first nails that ever saw. But I've got to put a wood spacer in there too, because it's got a gap where the notch, it didn't go all the way in as far as it could have in the notch. And I got to fill that gap so that when I bash it in, it doesn't move the post and change the location. There's got to be some work done there. It's interesting. It's held up all these years, and it's not supported only by that. But that's an additional weight-bearing point on the deck. It's attached, actually, to the existing deck of the house, too. And that spans 14 feet. There's lots of support. It's capable of spanning 14 feet, the deck is, without any support in the middle. This is an additional support in the middle that probably wasn't even necessary, but it's great to have it because I can use it as a wall support. I'm excited about this idea. We've got a few good days coming up, but designing things usually takes years, months, years, weeks. It takes a long time usually to design something. But not when you have a good idea that is ready, you know, the time of which has arrived, the time for which is here. Then designs can proceed very fast. And I designed the console in my studio. The console in my studio is out there in that room. But I built it. I'm sure I looked at a lot of other designs that other people had done for consoles before I built it. But I built it custom. It's a custom design for my equipment and all the things that I had. And now I want to build another console, or maybe I want to convert that console so that I can use it for a computer-oriented, digital mixing desk, which is probably... But I was going to build a whole new console. Or the one that would mount my keyboard and things like that, because the problem I'm having with that idea is the console where the keyboard is faces away from the monitor speakers. So if I want to monitor, I'd be monitoring the music from behind with my back to it, to the monitors. That's not the way you monitor usually. You can do it. It's just, it's probably not the way you should do it. You need to ideally be facing your speakers. And I'm not going to move my monitors because the studio's, or the room has been designed already. At least I don't think I will. I've got absorption on one end, on one side. All the absorption would have to be changed. or the whole room characteristic would change. So, yeah, it's the design of that studio was, it was an enormous amount of work in the design of the studio. Enormous amount of research, enormous amount of study, enormous amount of design, you know, calculations, all sorts of things. Because of the acoustic calculations necessary to figure out what the bass resonances would be and all that. But a lot of things go into it. And there's a lot of things that you don't do. I'm not saying I did everything correctly or that I did, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding, the result. You know, the result is what speaks for itself in some cases, right? I mean, but it's the ultimate, the result is the ultimate test of anything. When you worship the true God, you get the best results, you know, and people say, how did you do that? That's how it was done, is by faith in the true God. But they don't accept that if they don't believe in God, right? So they won't believe that. They'll say, no, how did you really do it? You know, they don't understand that. But there's a lot of work involved in all of any successful design, especially, you know, including, and especially probably including things like recording studios. I never put the final door in the studio because, you know, but if I did, that would change the room characteristics again, too. It wouldn't have the same characteristics as it has now. But I'm not saying I thought of everything when I designed that room. Far from it. I had to not do, or I had to omit a lot of things. Every design is like that, where you don't think of everything and you don't try to think of everything. You need the right focus on, you know, you need, and you don't know what it is until you do it. And then if it works, you know you had the right focus. You need to focus on the right things. Jehovah will tell you what the right things are, and you focus on those things. You do them, it works. End of story. It's that simple. If you listen to the true God and you do what you're getting, the information you're getting from Him, if you do what He's telling you, you always succeed. There's no... And if you fail in some way, it's because you didn't listen enough, or you didn't, you know, there's something you did wrong along the way. Or you started relying on your own ideas. That's the other thing, right? That's when you fail. You start relying on... Sometimes you rely on your past experience, and it doesn't always work. So, but you need to listen to your conscience. That's what it is. You listen to your conscience. Every step of every job, you listen to your conscience. And when your conscience tells you, well, I can't do that, I have to modify this, or I have to do this other step first before I do that, that's your conscience telling you to do that. When you listen to your conscience, and your conscience is Bible-based, trained by Jehovah from His Word, the Word of God, the Bible, if you're trained by that, your conscience is trained by that. I mean, if your conscience is trained by that, then you always do things in the proper sequence. You always stop when it's appropriate before you proceed further, and you make the necessary adjustments as needed according to your conscience. It's that simple. But you can be very technical. As an engineer, you can be doing calculations and all these things as well as part of it. You know, human ideas are used along the way, but it's how you use those human ideas that requires divine direction. So David, Psalm 37. We're at 44 minutes. Jehovah, please help us to study this material, to understand your word, the Bible, in Jesus' name. You know what? Amen. And you know what? I just thought of something. I thought of something yesterday, which I needed to say today. And that is that we can't just study, you know, a few books of the Bible. We can't just study, well, let's just study these few books right now. You know, we're already finding out, well, I don't understand what's going on in this book, the Bible, right? It's already happening because we've read enough to know that we don't know everything. We've read enough to know that Jehovah's saying things about Moab and about Babylon and about things, and we don't know why he's saying these things or what's going on or what. There's enough, there are, or why Jesus is doing what he's doing. We don't know all these things. We don't understand why David is writing all these songs to Jehovah, exactly why all this is happening in the way it is. The answer to what is going on, the way to find out the answer to what's happening in all these things, is we need to study the whole Bible. That's the answer, not just part of it. We need to understand and think about the whole Bible at the same time as we study these few books. We need to know what they mean in the context of the whole book. That's the problem we're up against right now. We have to expand even more. Our study has to expand even greater than it has already. That's why we're not going to progress until we get that overall viewpoint. Then we can start to fit everything into the viewpoint and understand it. So we're not going to do that today, don't worry, but we will have to get to this. Of David, do not show yourself heated up because of the evildoers. Do not be envious of those doing unrighteousness. For like grass, they will speedily wither. And like green new grass, they will fade away. Trust in Jehovah and do good. Reside in the earth and deal with faithfulness. Also, take exquisite delight in Jehovah, and he will give you the requests of your heart. Roll upon Jehovah your way and rely upon him, and he himself will act. And he will certainly bring forth your righteousness as the light itself and your justice as the midday. Keep silent before Jehovah and wait longingly for him. Do not show yourself heated up at anyone making his way successful, at the man carrying out his ideas. Let anger alone and leave rage. Do not show yourself heated up only to do evil, for evildoers themselves will be cut off. But those hoping in Jehovah are the ones that will possess the earth. And just a little while longer, and the wicked one will be no more. And you will certainly give attention to his place, and he will not be. But the meek ones themselves will possess the earth. And they will find their exquisite delight in the abundance of peace. The wicked one is plotting against the righteous one, and at him he is grinding his teeth. Jehovah himself will laugh at him, for he certainly sees that his day will come. The wicked ones have drawn a sword itself and have bent their bow, to cause the afflicted and poor one to fall, to slaughter those who are upright in their way. Their own sword will enter into their heart, and their own bows will be broken. Better is the little of the righteous one than the abundance of the many wicked ones. For the very arms of the wicked ones will be broken, but Jehovah will be supporting the righteous ones. Jehovah is aware of the days of the faultless ones, and their very inheritance will continue, even to time indefinite. They will not be ashamed in the time of calamity, and in the days of famine they will be satisfied, for the wicked themselves will perish, and the enemies of Jehovah will be like the preciousness of pastures. They must come to their end. In smoke, they must come to their end. The wicked one is borrowing and does not pay back, but the righteous one is showing favor and is making gifts. For those being blessed by him will themselves possess the earth, but those upon whom evil is called by him will be cut off. By Jehovah, the very steps of an able-bodied man have been made ready, and in his way he takes delight. Although he may fall, he will not be hurled down, for Jehovah is supporting his hand. A young man I used to be. I have also grown old, and yet I have not seen anyone righteous left entirely, nor his offspring looking for bread. All day long he is showing favor and lending, and so his offspring are in line for a blessing. Turn away from what is bad and do what is good, and so reside to time indefinite. For Jehovah is a lover of justice, and he will not leave his loyal ones. To time indefinite they will certainly be guarded. But as for the offspring of the wicked ones, they will indeed be cut off. The righteous themselves will possess the earth, and they will reside forever upon it. The mouth of the righteous is the one that utters wisdom in an undertone, and his is the tongue that speaks justly. The law of his God is in his heart. His steps will not wobble. The wicked one is keeping on the watch for the righteous and is seeking to put him to death. As for Jehovah, He will not leave him to the hand of that one, and he will not pronounce him wicked when he is being judged. Hope in Jehovah and keep his way, and he will exalt you to take possession of the earth. When the wicked ones are cut off, you will see it. I have seen the wicked, a tyrant, and spreading himself as a luxuriant tree in native soil, and yet he proceeded to pass away, and there he was not. And I kept seeking him, and he was not found. Watch the blameless one and keep the upright one in sight, for the future of that man will be peaceful, but the transgressors themselves will certainly be annihilated together. The future of wicked people will indeed be cut off. And the salvation of the righteous ones is from Jehovah. He is their fortress in the time of distress, and Jehovah will help them and provide them with escape. He will provide them with escape from wicked people and save them, because they have taken refuge in him. Psalm 37. Well, you can tell by the way I'm reading there, you possibly can tell, I don't have any memorized copy of this in my head. I'm reading it as I go along, so I will make at least an occasional mistake in the reading. But I do know what's in this psalm. I do know the content well enough to know, or to have some idea what way or how to read it. Where to put emphasis or de-emphasis or whatever, but it's still, it's a very improvisational thing for me to read this. I'm improvising as I read. It's a lot more interesting that way for me. I hope it is for other people to listen to as well. But I mean, there are times when I will undoubtedly make mistakes in the reading, hopefully at a point where it will be instructive somehow, and that maybe people can learn from the error that I make, you know, including me. But maybe there are definitely other times when my reading will be much better because I'm improvising, and it will sound more as a natural flow. It will flow more naturally, I should say, and it will be more more gratifying to listen to or to read for me as a reader. But it works in both ways. It doesn't, there's no way that I'm never going to make a mistake. There's no way I'm going to read flawlessly forever. My concentration slips, or I'm concentrating. It's like when designing something, you can't concentrate on everything. You can only concentrate on what you think are the important aspects of the design and try to get those important things right. You can't concentrate perfectly on it, or to the same extent, or perfectly on everything, right? So I'm not concentrating perfectly on all of the words. I need to concentrate on what I think are the important aspects when I'm reading. Well, I got to this point where I said, there was some place where the word order, where the words could be in a different order. And then if it's not critical what order they're in, or sometimes even when it is, I'll get it wrong. But I will vary that order sometimes if my mind, it's a little bit dyslexic, I guess, when you switch the order. Dyslexia possibly is something that we all have to some extent. I'm not sure, but I believe that might be true. But there was something about leaving. You will not leave the righteous ones. The interesting thing that we keep seeing is that the wicked one falls into his own net. And in verse 15, their own sword will enter into their heart. The wicked one's heart will be pierced by his own sword, it's saying. But I'm not going to try to remember my errors, I think. I think that's not what we want to focus on. We want to remember the good things and not focus on the errors. That's just, I mean, it's because life is too short. We don't need to spend all our time focusing on how to correct all of our errors. Right? I mean, we can allow it to be corrected on its own. They will correct if we focus on what we're doing correct. If we focus on the correct things that we're doing, focus on what we're doing correctly, all the errors will eventually become less over time. So we don't need to focus on those errors. That's another aspect of this, of the reading process, I should say. But where does it say where Jehovah, he will not leave those? Verse 17, Jehovah will be supporting the righteous ones. The enemies of Jehovah must come to their end, verse 20. In smoke they must come to their end. You know how you burn the grass? People burn their lawns at the end of the season to prepare for the next growth, the new growth. Well, that's how the wicked ones will perish, it says here. Jehovah will be supporting, though, the able-bodied man. That was verse 24. That was. Verse 25. I have not seen anyone righteous left entirely. That's fascinating, because that's the same concept. Jehovah doesn't leave the ones he loves. He doesn't abandon them. He will not leave his loyal ones. Verse 28. He will not leave him to the hand of the wicked one. Verse 33, that's the one I read wrong. I said something else. Let's not even relive it. But that's it. hope in Jehovah and keep his way. Verse 34. But it was, so it was prior to this 33 that I actually made another mistake somewhere. It's just that I don't know if I could find it. It's so difficult to remember exactly where it was. This psalm is fairly repetitive, so that's why it becomes, even though there's a lot of different concepts in there, it becomes more difficult, it is, I think, in fact, or it becomes that way, more difficult, that is, to find things that you're trying to revisit. Maybe it was this one. But those upon whom evil is called by him will be cut off. Yeah, that might have been where I sort of slipped. Those upon whom evil is called, because you could say, but upon those, you could say, but that wouldn't be the right meaning in this case. But you could say that in some other sentence, but not in this case, because it's those upon whom evil is called. I think that might have been where I slipped. But I like to review things, but it's not the most important thing that we do is revisit our errors, right? We don't focus on the errors. We're focusing on all the other things. The errors are not the focus. We need to know what, learn from them, but they're not the main focus at all. Let's look at Isaiah 17. See, that psalm almost stands on its own. It almost doesn't need the rest of the Bible to interpret it. It's just talking about the wicked and the righteous and how Jehovah supports the righteous. Isaiah 17. Look, against Damascus, Jehovah. The pronouncement against Damascus. We've already seen Moab and Babylon and places, you know, against whom, and Jehovah has pronounced against his own people. O Moab, 16 and 3, and 16 and 4, I should say, yeah. But that's not against Moab. That's saying that Moab would be a place of residence for Jehovah's people. Moab, fascinating. Well, okay, I want to look up Moab. Let's see, where does Moab occur in the book of Isaiah? If we can find it. I think it mentioned Moab already. I want to know this before we go too far here. 15. Is it? Yes. The pronouncement against Moab. 15 and 1. Yes, that was it. And there was a pronouncement against Babylon. Where was that? I'm thinking 13. Yep, 13. Isaiah 13 against Babylon. Okay. 17. Now we're at 17. Pronouncement against Damascus. Look, Damascus removed from being a city and she has become a heap, a decaying ruin. The cities of Aroer that have been left behind become mere places for droves, where they actually lie down with no one to make them tremble. And the fortified city has been made to cease out of Ephraim, and the kingdom out of Damascus, and those of Syria remaining over will become just like the glory of the sons of Israel, is the utterance of Jehovah of armies. And it must occur in that day that the glory of Jacob will become lowly, and even the fatness of his flesh will be made lean. And it must occur that when the harvester is gathering the standing grain, and his own arm harvests the ears of grain, he must even become like one gleaning ears of grain in the low plain of Rephaim. And there must remain in it a gleaning, as when there is a beating off of the olive tree, two or three ripe olives in the top of the branch, four or five on the fruit-bearing boughs thereof, is the utterance of Jehovah, the God of Israel. In that day, earthling man will look up to his Maker, and his own eyes will gaze at the Holy One of Israel himself, and he will not look to the altars, the work of his hands, and at what his fingers have made. He will not gaze either at the sacred poles or at the incense stands. In that day, his fortress cities will become like a place left entirely in the woodland. Even the branch that they have left entirely on account of the sons of Israel. And it must become a desolate waste. For you have forgotten the God of your salvation, and the rock of your fortress you have not remembered. That is why you plant pleasant plantations, and with the shoot of a stranger you set it. In the day you may carefully fence about the plantation of yours, and in the morning you may cause the seed of yours to sprout. But the harvest will certainly flee in the day of the disease and incurable pain. Ha! For the commotion of many peoples, who are boisterous as with the boisterousness of the seas, and for the noise of national groups who make a din, just like the noise of mighty waters. The national groups themselves will make a din, just like the noise of many waters, and he will certainly rebuke it. And it must flee far away and be chased like the chaff of the mountains before a wind, and like a thistle whirl before a storm wind. At evening time, why look, there is sudden terror. Before morning, it is no more. This is the share of those pillaging us, and the lot belonging to those plundering us. Isaiah 17. So there will be possibly a moment of disastrous sudden terror, but it will pass quickly. That's a very, very encouraging thing to think about, because we know disaster can strike. Earthling man will look to his Maker at some point here. I've got a shipment confirmation. I ordered some. Important things, some nutrients, supplements. There were some krill I ordered, and what else did I order? I think what did I order? The krill. It's funny, I can't remember. Here it is. Well, that doesn't give me that. Okay. All right, I'll check. Here it is. Where is it? Here it is. Oh, yeah, of course. So obvious what I ordered. Vitamin K2. More vitamin K2, because I'm using more of it these days and I needed to get a little more. Keep my stock replenished. The glory of Jacob will become lowly in verse 4 here. Against Damascus, this was. That's in Syria, but it's sort of across. It's Damascus is more closer to the sea, I believe, maybe. Is it from Damascus? I mean, from inland. Let's see, where's Damascus? Get a map of Damascus. Right. It's sort of near the sea. It's not on the sea. I think the more I zoom out, the closer to the sea it is, but of course. Yeah, it's not right on the seacoast, but it's near the Mediterranean. It sounds like Jehovah's saying that, well, the fortified city has been made to cease, it says, out of Ephraim, and those of Syria remaining over will become just like the glory of the sons of Israel, which means they will be made low, right? It says in verse 4, the glory of Jacob being Israel, will become low. And it must occur that when the harvester is gathering, the harvester will become like a gleaner who can only get a few small items or a few very small number of very little fruit. You can harvest very little fruit from the grain or from the olives or whatever. He can hardly get anything in the harvest. He's not going to be very glorious in that day that's being mentioned. But in that day, earthling man will look up to his maker, in verse 7. In verse 10, they had forgotten the God of their salvation. Instead, they were just planting their pleasant plantations, but they weren't going to see a good harvest. In verse 11, the harvest will certainly flee in the day of the disease and incurable pain. That's the thing. When I've been having, without vitamin C, we get disease, we get infections. Without vitamin K2, we get pain in arthritis. These are the things I've been learning about those vitamins. But we need a lot of other nutrients too. But those are essential nutrients that are sometimes missing from our diet. Very frequently, I think they're missing because vitamin K2 is a vitamin present in grass-fed animals, and we don't feed animals grass anymore a lot of times. We're feeding them something else that's not so green, that doesn't have as much potential for producing vitamin K2. K2 is not the same as vitamin K1. It's a different thing altogether. It's related to it, but it's nowhere comparable in its power. Vitamin K1 is not comparable to vitamin K2 in its power. Anyway, look at this. The nations are often compared to the sea, the waves of the sea. So they're making a noise in verse 13 of many waters, the national peoples, groups of people of the nations. But Jehovah will rebuke their noise and chase them away. It's interesting. So even though Jehovah's people might be unfaithful as a group, the large body of them, the majority of them are unfaithful, but there is hope for somebody here because Jehovah is going to rebuke the nations in verse 13. And they're going to cease to be. It is no more in verse 14. That's the share of those pillaging us. So there's hope for somebody belonging to Israel, like the faithful of Israel, the remnant, or the ones who are faithful. There's something given there judgment by Jehovah there that gives hope. It's not at all hopeless. It's important that we acknowledge where we have deficiencies, though. So in John 17, it's not too long, I don't think we're going to get to it today, though. We could read it, maybe. Maybe we can get to it. It's time to go outside if I want to get some work done. I want to go out pretty soon, too. But Jesus spoke these things, and raising his eyes to heaven, he said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may... He just said, I've conquered the world, right? Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you, according as you have given him authority over all flesh, that as regards the whole number whom you have given him, he may give them everlasting life. This means everlasting life. They're taking in knowledge of you, the only true God, and of the one whom you sent forth, Jesus Christ. I have glorified you on the earth, having finished the work you have given me to do. So now you, Father, glorify me alongside yourself with the glory that I had alongside you before the world was. This is John writing all this. John, who was the beloved one of Jesus, who would be knowing Jesus better than anyone. Jesus goes on, I have made your name manifest to the men you gave me out of the world. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have observed your word. They have now come to know that all the things you gave me are from you, because the sayings that you gave me I have given to them, and they have received them, and have certainly come to know that I came out as your representative, and they have believed that you sent me forth. I make requests concerning them. I make requests not concerning the world, but concerning those you have given me, because they are yours. And all my things are yours, and yours are mine, and I have been glorified among them. Also, I am no longer in the world, but they are in the world, and I am coming to you. Holy Father, watch over them on account of your own name, which you have given me, in order that they may be one, just as we are. When I was with them, I used to watch over them on account of your own name, which you have given me, and I have kept them, and not one of them is destroyed except the son of destruction, in order that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you, and I am speaking these things in the world, in order that they may have my joy in themselves to the full. I have given your word to them, but the world has hated them, because they are no part of the world, just as I am no part of the world. I request you not to take them out of the world, but to watch over them because of the wicked one. They are no part of the world, just as I am no part of the world. Sanctify them by means of the truth. Your word is truth. Just as you sent me forth into the world, I also sent them forth into the world. And I am sanctifying myself in their behalf, that they also may be sanctified by means of truth. I make requests, not concerning these only, but also concerning those putting faith in me through their word, in order that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in union with me, and I am in union with you, that they also may be in union with us, in order that the world may believe that you sent me forth. Also, I have given them the glory that you have given me, in order that they may be one, just as we are one. I in union with them, and you in union with me, in order that they may be perfected into one, that the world may have the knowledge that you sent me forth, and that you love them just as you love me. Father, as to what you have given me, I wish that where I am, they also may be with me, in order to behold my glory that you have given me, because you loved me before the founding of the world. Righteous Father, the world has indeed not come to know you, but I have come to know you. And these have come to know that you sent me forth, and I have made your name known to them, and will make it known, in order that the love with which you loved me may be in them, and I in union with them. That's the end of John chapter 17. We're right at the end of our study today. This is Jesus' final prayer on behalf of his disciples, in a sense, here. We're about to see in chapter 18 where they arrest Jesus. Yeah, and so this is the final speech in John chapter 17, very significant. And the most memorable, possibly the most memorable verse here is, This means everlasting life, John 17:3. They're taking in knowledge of you, the only true God, and of the one whom you sent forth, Jesus Christ. This is Ward Green, November 7th, 2022, 1346 hours. I love you. Have a wonderful day. You're welcome to join us in the study anytime. Continue the study if you desire. Welcome to the new ones, and thanks for listening and watching. Bye for now.